This is a podcast from Bloomsbury TNT Clark with Professor Stanley Porter of McMaster Divinity College. In this podcast, I talk to Stan about his book, Constantine Tischendorf, The Life and Work of a 19th Century Bible Hunter, which was published in January 2015 to mark Tischendorf's bicentenary. The podcast was made at SBL in 2014, and it was recorded in a room just off the book exhibit, so the recording quality is not as high as it may be, but I hope that the content will prove to be diverting nonetheless. I'm here at SBL with Professor Stanley Porter of McMaster Divinity College, and we're going to talk a little bit about his forthcoming book, Constantine Tischendorf, Bible Hunter. Thank you for spending the time, Stan. We had a couple of things to talk about, and I wondered if you could kick things off for us with an explanation of who Tischendorf was.
Okay, Dominic, thank you. Tischendorf was one of these phenomenal guys who lived in the 19th century. We're coming up next year on the 200th anniversary of his birth. He was born in 1815. And he was born in Leipzig, Germany, or around about there, a little village outside Leipzig. Grew up in the area, was educated there at the university, and then went on to one of these phenomenal careers where he had this drive and this ambition. And this drive and ambition led him to do some very phenomenal things. He was really intent on showing, in light of the rise of German historical criticism, that rather than the more we knew about the Bible undermining credibility in the Bible, he thought the more we could find out about the manuscripts, the early texts, this would show that the Bible, in fact, was a very reliable document. Go back very early in the history of the church and really establish a firm basis for his Christian faith in these documents. And so he undertook to find and to discover and to publish as many of those documents that he could find, not only Greek New Testament documents, but Septuagint texts and a variety of other documents as well, which led him all over Europe and down into the Sinai area, finding and locating these manuscripts. And still today, I think he probably discovered and published more of those kinds of manuscripts than any other human being. And he only lived a short time, died in 1874. He'd accomplished quite a bit.
What is it, I suppose we've touched on a couple of the issues already, but what is it that particularly attracted you to Tischendorf and to produce a volume on Tischendorf?
Well, I think it starts back when I was a student of theology, and everybody comes across Tischendorf. Tischendorf is just a name that gets mentioned because he's hard to avoid, having done that much work. And we'll talk a little bit more about his discovery of the Sinai Codex, which is such an important New Testament manuscript. But anytime that's mentioned, Tischendorf's name often gets associated with it. But sometimes there are a lot of comments made about Tischendorf and how he came across the manuscript, what he did in the process of publishing that. And those raised some interesting questions. I soon wanted to find out more. I myself got involved in a lot of papyrological work and publishing papyri, editing some papyri, and in a small way had undertaken some of the similar discoveries, finding and identifying a manuscript for the first time, so I could share a little bit in a small way in the great thrill that he must have experienced in doing that. And all that just prompted me to try to find out more about him. And then, to jump to the big discovery, which was the Sinai Codex, he encountered that in three different visits that he made to Sinai. The first was in 1844. And there he was shown the manuscript. And again, there's controversy surrounding the circumstances of his finding it. I tend to believe Tischendorf's story that it looked like they were disposing of the manuscript, perhaps throwing it in the fire, and he saw this really old manuscript, one of the earliest he'd ever found, and he already was an experienced papyrologist and person who knew manuscripts. And so he looked at it, was able to take away a number of sheets. He published those. He went back in 1853, and there was no sign, really, of the manuscript, maybe a little bit of a fragment of one piece. And then in 1859, he went back again, and this time, just as he was going to leave, he was shown the manuscript, and through a series of events was able to take it and copy it, but but knew that he needed to have more time to actually edit it properly for publication. And there's a lot of controversy about the circumstances under which he got that permission, and eventually in 3 years produced a beautiful, wonderful facsimile manuscript of it. But then later in 1975, at St. Catherine's Monastery in Sinai, where this was, they discovered some more pages of this manuscript. They found them, I guess, in some kind of a walled-off room or something like that. And that's where I kind of entered the picture, in that I was in Britain at the time, and there was talk about these manuscripts, what they were going to do with them, and I inquired about the possibility of getting involved in some way. That didn't work out. But again, it sort of renewed my interest in a firm way, not only these manuscripts, but looking more into Tischendorf's life. So out of that came my looking into his life, investigating the story surrounding this manuscript, and producing my short little short biographical treatment of his life.
Mm-hmm. And when we first started discussing the idea of publishing it and making a book out of it for Tischendorf's bicentenary, I remember being quite excited by the idea of being able to present something in English about his life, because we couldn't really find anything else out there. And as you said, he's one of those characters that everyone comes across, and his life is fascinating, and there's something of the sort of epic to the way not only Tischendorf but also quite a lot of those 19th century figures went out into the desert looking for biblical manuscripts, and so I'm really thrilled that we have the book coming out. We've also put your biographical work together with some of Tischendorf's own work, his Weihrauch Gospels written, and I wondered if you could speak a bit about how Tischendorf translates for the contemporary biblical scholar.
Yeah, good question. But you're right, Tischendorf was one of those, you know, larger-than-life figures, you said almost epic. And not only was he traveling around finding these manuscripts, and he just published voluminously on them, and so he did a lot of technical work, and many of the editions that he did were the first editions ever done. And he even, in fact, had one of the earliest, and some say arguably the most accurate editions of Vaticanus. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly enough. So he did that. He was the one who also deciphered Ephraim Rescriptus, which was a palimpsest, you know, a later manuscript had been written over it. But along the way, Tischendorf, again, as I said earlier, he wanted to tie all of his so-called scientific discovery in with his own Christian beliefs. And so this book, Why Were Our Gospels Written, was his attempt to bring the discoveries that he had done in manuscript work out of the strictly technical scientific world, and to show what kind of application it would have for the Christian person who's interested in finding out what is the textual basis, what is the security of the Bible that we have. And so, yeah, I'm very glad that we're able to reprint this book. This book was published by Tischendorf, and the original edition, it didn't include the story of his discovery of the manuscript in Sinai, but in later editions in German, it added that. When it was translated into English, they included it. So there's two parts to this book. One is his own account of how he found the Sinai Codex. But the second part is actually an extended argument, not extended and long, but pretty detailed argument in how he reconstructs the textual development of early Christianity. And he kind of starts at the end and works his way back. And so he's concerned with some of the church fathers and what they say. He's concerned with some of the early manuscripts, and then ties it back to the Sinai Codex that he thinks, on the basis of the manuscript itself, its relationship to some of the early versions, goes back to a second century textual tradition, which makes it very, very early. Mm-hmm. And so this was a big book in its time. Sold a lot of copies, went into several reprints, and even after his lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And now we're giving it new life 200 years after
his birth. We are. But the German scholar, there are several German scholars, and I have been in some touch with some of them who have already undertaken to reassess and look at Tischendorf's life. But there hasn't been a lot of taking that work and putting it into English yet. Mm-hmm. And so through my correspondence with these, I've been able to, I think, incorporate some things that bring the account surrounding what happened with the manuscript, Tischendorf's involvement, as up to date as I know how to, and as I think the evidence indicates. And basically, I think it vindicates Tischendorf. Some people say that Tischendorf stole the manuscript. It seems from the records we have, and we have a number of things. We have his own personal correspondence. We have a lot. He was mm-hmm. one of those, of course, back then you had to be, but one of those great letter writers. And mm-hmm. so he frequently wrote back home. He had a wife and many kids, and was apparently very concerned to be a good father and husband. Mm-hmm. But also, he wrote about what was going on, and he was concerned that, you know, the monks at Sinai were being treated fairly. And when there was some delay in settling the thing, he was pushing for resolution. And very much, he loaned the manuscript, left a document saying that, you know, he was taking it as a loan. But then it was later given to the Tsar. And then there are documents that indicate sort of that the monks accepted that and payment was made. And so it seems like with these documents, which for some reason were not well known, or I think they were also in the hands of the Russians for a long time. Now they're mm-hmm. more publicly known, and we can see that I think there was a good faith effort on his part to make this a good situation for everybody.
So, if you could just sum up by saying what you think the enduring contribution of Tischendorf is to biblical studies, and what you think the unique contribution of this book on Tischendorf is.
Okay, I still think that Tischendorf, even though he lived a long time ago, he still remains one of those towering figures in biblical studies, certainly a towering figure in papyrology, textual criticism. He edited manuscripts, and his editions have endured. For some of the manuscripts he did, I think they're still certainly the first edition, still in some cases probably the only edition that's been done. But of course, the Sinai Codex is the big accomplishment. And as witness the recent project to digitize that text, it still is a hugely important document in biblical studies, especially New Testament studies. And all of this stems from the work that Tischendorf did in bringing it to light and producing his beautiful facsimile edition. He also was important in developing principles for textual criticism and applied those. He had many editions of not only the Greek Old Testament, but especially the Greek New Testament, and his eighth edition is still considered one of the greatest editions of the Greek New Testament ever done. The critical apparatus is very thorough. Obviously, it couldn't be more thorough than the time when he published it, but mm-hmm. it's hugely reliable and still widely used as a resource for all the kinds of textual witnesses that we have. But just so many different areas that he still just a major, major figure, and the quality of his work is outstanding. I think the contribution of this particular book is probably a couple of things. One is it brings Tischendorf back to life at a key time. You know, mm-hmm. we're celebrating the 200 years of his birth, and I think it's appropriate that we let people know who he was for people who have perhaps forgotten. I'm keen on the idea that we help ourselves to understand our disciplines when we know its history and the key people who have played a role in it. Not just the ideas that have developed, but the ideas are embodied with people. You know, it's the mm-hmm. people who come up with the ideas. And so it's good to see the lives of these individuals and the ideas that they have come out of who they are. And so the Sinai manuscript that we still have, this is result of a lot of work of one guy in particular and others as well. But so it's worth recounting who he was, the various difficulties he had, the adventures that he had, you know, all that he went through. So the book tries to emphasize that. A second thing is it tries to, I think, clarify, as I mentioned earlier, in some of these areas where there's controversy, what I think is the best explanation of it. And I really do think that Tischendorf comes off looking very, very good, a man of integrity, and that he was definitely wanting to publish the manuscript. He definitely had some ideas about it, but he was also concerned to treat everyone in a fair and equitable way in relationship to that. And so I think we can bring that out. Then the third would be bringing in his own work. I don't think very many people have probably read this little book mm-hmm. that he did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Yeah, and so it's, you can find it online some places, but it's, I don't, I'm not even sure it's in print anywhere else. And but it is an interesting window into the controversies of his time, his take on those issues. But also, it's a surprisingly contemporary issue. You know, how do we reconstruct the history mm-hmm. of early Christianity? We're still very much concerned with that. And I think he had a very interesting and important voice in it, and now we bring that back into circulation.
Great. And you mentioned the facsimile edition, and you've told me in the past that that you have a copy of the edition that was done for the Tsar, which fascinated me, and I hope maybe one of these days I might get to see it. But one of the reasons that I was so attracted to this book was that I'm a publisher. We're in the business of books, and that sounds like a wonderful edition. And I wonder if we could close with just you sort of describing that particular facsimile edition.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'm very fortunate to be able to own one of these. When Tischendorf finally got access so he could do his edition, it took him 3 years to produce this edition, and he had some ties through family ties and other things in the Leipzig environment to a great publishing mm-hmm. world, right? Leipzig was known as a great publishing city. And so he got special paper design, but then also he got special type fonts designed mm-hmm. for this, so that it wasn't just, you know, one Omega or one Omicron, whatever it was used. He had several different, depending on the hands found in the manuscript,
mm-hmm.
and then he set this facsimile so it was close as reproducing what you would see on the page as was possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just a beautiful example of book production. It comes in four volumes. One volume is sort of prolegomena, where he traces things, talks about various relationships and readings and things like that. And then there are two volumes of the Old Testament, and then one of the New Testament. And
mm-hmm.
originally there, I think, latest estimations are about 327 were produced, and the Tsar was given a certain number. And then Tischendorf took, I think was given about 100 of them, and he sold those. And that was basically his financial compensation for
mm-hmm.
all of this effort, was to sell those books, what he could get from it, which made it pretty tough.
Mm.
Sometimes we think royalties today are a little bit difficult, but he had to go sell these things too to get his any money back. But they were produced apparently, I didn't know this until recently, produced apparently in two different colors, because we have evidence for them. Some are in this sort of a maroon that seems to be maroon for the Russian Empire, and then there's a dark blue. And I haven't been able to figure out, and some of the people I've talked with, they don't seem to know quite why the different colors. But sometimes
mm-hmm.
you'll see one, sometimes you'll see the other. My set is in the maroon colors, which I think was probably one of the 100 sets sold by Tischendorf, so far as I can tell.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for spending the time today to talk about the book, and I'm very excited about it, and I think after listening to this, a lot of people will be as well.
Thank you, Dominic.
Thank you.